Like when you rent an apartment, there's a really clear, understood boundary, right?
Right, yeah, you have a lease.
Exactly. You have the key. And if the landlord wants to come in, they have to knock. They got to give like at least 24 hours notice. It's just this fundamental expectation of your own personal space.
Yeah, it's the foundation of basic property rights. It's the physical embodiment of your personal autonomy.
Right. But then you look at our digital spaces, our personal hard drives, our private direct messages, our actual biological attention spans, and suddenly that locked front door is just, well, a complete illusion.
Oh, absolutely.
We're basically living in this landscape where the digital landlord isn't just, walking into the apartment unannounced. They're actively rearranging your furniture and like claiming the extra bedroom entirely for themselves.
Which is frankly the absolute definition of digital overreach. And it's accelerating so much faster than most people even realize. If you look at picture a sprawling cyberpunk style cityscape where the corporations literally own the oxygen. That's kind of the vibe we're approaching.
Yeah, wow, that is a dark visual, but honestly accurate. Welcome to today's deep dive. We have a seriously fascinating stack of notes to go through today from the May 9, 2026 Tekken Night Tech Roundup.
It's a heavy stack this week.
It really is. And our mission for this deep dive, for you listening at home, is to connect the dots between six explosive tech stories from just this week. We're going to reveal this massive underlying shift in who actually controls our digital lives, our hardware, and our personal data. Okay, let's unpack this.
Let's do it.
I'm looking at these notes, and apparently my web browser is quietly hoarding its own private stash of files directly on my hard drive without asking me, like, what is going on here?
Yeah, so that is unfortunately not a metaphor. A security researcher named Alexander Hanhoff, he's known online as that privacy guy, along with outlets like Malwarebytes, they just uncovered this massive overstep by Google Chrome. They found that the browser has been quietly downloading this massive 4 GB AI model directly onto users' local computers.
Wait, 4 GB just in the
In the
background.
background, yeah. The model is called Gemini Nano. And Chrome just stashes it in this hidden directory labeled OptGuide on Device Model.
Wow.
No notification pop-up, no explicit permission request, just bam, 4 gigs of your storage taken.
A silent 4 GB payload just dropped onto my machine. That's wild. And here is the craziest part of this story in the notes. If you manage to track down this hidden folder, which is not easy, and you manually delete it to get your storage space back, Chrome just automatically redownloads it the next time you connect to the internet.
Yeah, it's relentless.
It literally feels like your landlord storing four massive boxes in your apartment without asking. And when you complain and throw them out on the street, they just quietly slide them back in the next day and say, well, don't worry, it's for your benefit.
Yeah, that captures the dynamic perfectly. I
Man.
mean, Google's official justification is that Gemini Nano is designed to, quote, improve user experience by bringing AI processing locally to your machine.
Right.
So the goal is for features like web page summarization or advanced translation or smart writing assistance to happen instantly on your hardware so they don't have to send that data back and forth to their cloud servers.
Which, okay, on paper, that sounds kind of nice, right? I mean, I get the appeal of faster processing and not relying on the cloud, but I really have to ask you, is the convenience of having an offline AI translator really worth losing the autonomy of our own hard drives? I mean, 4 GB is a huge chunk of space if you're running like a lightweight laptop.
Exactly. And what's fascinating here is that the line between a helpful, innovative feature and a direct hardware violation has essentially vanished. We really have to look at the underlying mechanics here.
Yeah, break that down for me.
Well, yes, local processing means your data doesn't get beamed to a server. That's a privacy win, technically. But an AI model isn't just a static file, it requires system resources. So Google is unilaterally deciding how your hardware's RAM and solid-state storage are allocated.
Right, they're spending your computer's energy.
Precisely. And the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the EFF, issued a really stark warning about this. They stated it sets an incredibly dangerous precedent for user autonomy.
I mean, the lack of transparency is the real issue for me. You can't just click a simple no thanks button on a pop-up. You literally have to dig deep into the Chrome flags, which, for the listener, if you don't know, that's basically a hidden developer menu buried in the software that normal people should never, ever have to touch.
Oh, absolutely not. It's not user-friendly at all.
Right. Or you have to constantly monitor your task manager just to maintain basic control of the storage you paid for.
Which forces a pretty stark realization for consumers right now. privacy advocates are openly advising users to just jump ship. They're saying move to alternative browsers like Brave or Firefox or Vivaldi.
Yeah, just ditch Chrome entirely.
Yeah. If you want control over your local storage today, you have to actively fight for it. The whole era of tech companies saying, trust us, we know it's best for your hardware, is definitively over.
It really is. And, you know, if Google's strategy is about annexing the physical space where AI lives, Meta's strategy is basically about seizing the food that AI eats.
Mm-hmm.
And an AI's absolute favorite food is human conversation.
Yeah.
So let's pivot to this Meta story, because they just took a sledgehammer to the concept of digital privacy on Instagram.
This one is huge. This is a monumental shift for messaging. As of yesterday, so May 8, 2026, Meta officially removed end-to-end encryption, or E2EE, from all Instagram direct messages.
Okay, just to make sure we're totally clear on the mechanics here for you listening. End-to-end encryption means that a message is mathematically scrambled on your phone, right? And it only gets unscrambled when it reaches your friend's phone. So not even the service provider, Meta in this case, has the key to read it.
Correct, yeah. The data passing through their servers was effectively just gibberish. But by removing that lock, Meta can now read the text, they can scan the images, and they can listen to the voice notes of billions of users.
That is terrifying.
It really is. Now, Meta's official PR statement claims that very few people actually opted into the encryption feature anyway, and they argue they need full access to scan messages for illegal content and to protect underage users.
Okay, I have to push back on that narrative.
I really do.
Meta says they're just protecting kids, which sure sounds noble on the surface. But if a private corporation has the power to read every single private DM sent by billions of people, isn't that essentially mass surveillance wearing a safety badge?
Critics and privacy watchdogs absolutely view it that way. I mean, the hypocrisy regarding the, quote, low adoption rate is glaring.
Right.
The only reason adoption was low is because Meta intentionally made encryption an opt-in toggle buried deep in the settings rather than just making it the default.
Of course, if you hide the safety feature, no one's going to use it.
Exactly. If you make privacy an extra hoop to jump through, naturally, usage will be low. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, there are massive underlying business and geopolitical reasons for this move.
Okay, I want to dig into those mechanics. Why does Meta actually want this data so badly right now?
First and foremost, AI training. Large language models don't just learn from reading encyclopedias. They need to understand how humans actually talk to each other.
Right.
They need billions of interactions to learn, you know, the spaces between words, the evolving slang, the nuance of sarcasm, and raw emotional context. Encrypted messages are useless dead ends for an algorithm.
Because it's just scrambled math.
Exactly. So by dropping the encryption lock, Meta just gained unrestricted access to arguably the largest, most authentic repository of conversational data on the planet.
So our private chats, our personal arguments, our inside jokes, those are all basically just protein powder for their AI models now.
Yes, that's a great way to put it. And add to that the targeted advertising potential. Meta claims they won't use DM content to serve ads right now, but the technical capability to do so is now fully active.
Right. The door is open.
The door is wide open.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, there's immense geopolitical pressure. You know, governments, particularly in the UK with their online safety bill and the EU's chat control legislation, they've been aggressively pushing tech giants to create backdoors into encrypted apps for law enforcement.
So this makes them look cooperative.
Exactly. Meta is essentially bowing to that pressure. It makes it infinitely easier to share data with authorities without facing the PR nightmare of intentionally breaking their own encryption tools.
Man. I know the ACLU is actually suing them over this right now. They're citing severe Fourth Amendment violations regarding illegal search and seizure. So the takeaway here is incredibly urgent. If you are listening to this right now, the advice from the entire cybersecurity community is totally uniform. Assume everything you send on Instagram can and will be read by Meta or law enforcement.
Yeah, you really have to treat Instagram DMs like a public billboard now.
Yeah.
If you need to have a sensitive conversation, you must migrate. Use Signal, which is open source and has encryption baked in by default, or utilize Telegram secret chats.
Yeah.
Privacy is no longer a default right, unfortunately. It is a luxury commodity that you only retain if you know exactly which tools to utilize.
Wow. So, okay, they want the physical space on our hard drives, and they want the training data from our private chats. But they also have to capture our actual biological attention spans.
Yes, they need eyeballs.
Let's look at how they're manipulating how we consume media. Amazon Prime Video just launched a brand new feature in the U.S. called Clips.
Oh, yes. The complete TikTok-ification of the internet continues to spread.
It is everywhere. I mean, imagine you open up the Amazon Prime app on your phone or your TV. Instead of just browsing movie titles like a normal catalog, you are immediately hit with this vertical, swipeable feed of 30-second to 2-minute video snippets.
Yeah, just constant scrolling.
It looks functionally identical to TikTok or Instagram Reels,
Yeah.
but it's pulling highly produced clips directly from Prime's catalog of movies and shows, complete with this massive button to instantly stream the full title. And there's a quote in the notes from Dr. Sarah Chen, a media critic from MIT, and it's blistering. She warned, quote, "We are training an entire generation to have the attention span of a goldfish."
Her warning really strikes at the core of how this changes our fundamental relationship with narrative art.
It really does. It's like sitting down at a Michelin star restaurant to appreciate a slow 2-hour meal, right? But the waiter keeps sprinting by and throwing deep fried appetizers at your head just to make sure you haven't fallen asleep looking at the menu.
Ha, that captures the frantic energy perfectly. But we really have to look at the incredibly calculated business logic behind this UI change. From Amazon's perspective, this is a masterstroke in reducing user friction.
How so?
Well, the traditional browse and select model, where you scroll through rows of static thumbnails, it requires active cognitive effort. You have to read a synopsis, you have to weigh the genres, commit to a 2-hour runtime, and make a definitive choice.
And look, if I'm being honest, half the time I do that for 20 minutes, I get exhausted by the choices and I just turn the TV off.
Exactly. That phenomenon right there is exactly what Amazon wants to eliminate. Passive algorithmic discovery, which is the infinite scroll that TikTok pioneered, bypasses that cognitive friction entirely. You don't choose, you just swipe.
Wow.
It keeps users trapped in the app significantly longer. But even more importantly, it feeds Amazon an incredibly granular data set. They can see the exact frame where users stop scrolling. They can measure the internal virality of specific dialogue.
But, I mean, what does that do to the actual art of filmmaking? Like, if I'm a director, I might build a scene slowly over 10 minutes to earn a massive emotional payoff. If Amazon's algorithm decides my art is only valuable as an out-of-context 30-second dopamine hit, that completely decontextualizes the storytelling.
It absolutely decontextualizes it, and the danger is that it forces creators into a corner. Future funding might dictate that directors design their 2-hour movies to inherently feature easily clippable viral moments just to survive the
Oh,
algorithm.
well, it's depressing.
It is. It threatens the very existence of slow-burn, complex narrative structures. But the metrics show this aggressive, bite-sized feeding is what the modern user engages with, so the streaming giants are just adopting it universally.
Man. So, okay, the tech industry is squeezing our attention spans, our private data, and our hard drives,
Yeah.
but they are also squeezing our wallets. And ironically, they are blaming the exact same AI boom for it. Let's talk about the situation with Nintendo.
Yeah, this is perhaps the most economically bizarre and telling story of the week, I think.
It really is. Shintaro Furukawa, Nintendo CEO, just announced that the Switch 2 is getting a massive price hike. In the US, starting on September 1, the console is jumping from $449.99.
A $50 price increase on hardware that has already been on the market and is currently sitting in millions of homes. It's wild.
It makes no sense. I'm looking at the sales data right here, and they have already sold 20 million units. The inventory is fully stabilized. You can walk into literally any big box store right now and buy one right off the shelf. But Furukawa blames this hike on, quote, changes in market conditions. And he specifically points to a global memory shortage caused by massive investments in AI data centers. Wait, I really have to challenge this logic. If they already successfully manufactured and sold 20 million units and supply is totally fine today, why raise the price? That defies the basic laws of supply and demand. Is this just pure corporate greed, or are they genuinely terrified of future component costs driven by AI?
Well, it is a highly calculated gamble, and we have to understand how memory manufacturing actually works to see why they are panicking right now. The AI boom isn't just taking up software space. It requires highly specialized physical hardware. Data centers building these massive AI models require a specific component called high bandwidth memory, or HBM. And the global silicon foundries that physically print these memory chips are entirely retooling their factories to prioritize HBM because tech giants will pay a massive, massive premium for it.
which means they are physically printing fewer of the standard, cheaper memory chips that go into consumer devices like the Nintendo Switch.
Exactly that. The supply pool for standard consumer memory is shrinking practically overnight. Nintendo is looking at their future production contracts and realizing that manufacturing the next 20 million units is going to cost significantly more than the first 20 million.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They are projecting a massive supply chain cost spike, and they are passing that cost directly onto the consumer before the crunch even hits their balance sheets.
But the risk they are taking here is astronomical. I mean, at $500, the Switch 2 is dangerously close to the rumored $549 to $599 price tag of the upcoming Steam Deck 2. And that is essentially a high-powered portable PC. Nintendo is gambling everything on the belief that consumers will pay a premium simply because you cannot play Mario or Zelda on a Steam Deck.
They really are. They are testing the absolute breaking limits of their brand loyalty right now.
So, hey, if you are listening and you want to Switch 2, you have until September 1st to buy it at the current price before this invisible AI tax hits your wallet. But, you know, that shrinking supply pool for memory chips exposes a much wider, honestly more terrifying vulnerability in the global tech landscape, which is the physical hardware supply chain itself.
Yes.
Which brings us to the biggest tectonic shift of the year in hardware manufacturing.
This is truly the geopolitical earthquake of the tech world right now.
Apple and Intel just reached a preliminary agreement for Intel to manufacture future Apple A-series and M-series chips on United States soil. They're aiming to utilize Intel's new facilities in either Arizona or Ohio by 2027 or 2028. And the second this news broke, Intel's stock skyrocketed 14 to 16% in a single day.
It's an historic and, frankly, desperately needed rally for a legacy manufacturer like Intel.
Furiously. To put this business deal in human terms, just so we can wrap our heads around it, Apple famously dumped Intel years ago to design and make their own silicon because Intel was lagging so far behind the curve.
Right.
So this new deal feels like getting back together with your high school ex because your current neighborhood got way too dangerous. But to be fair to the ex, they have genuinely hit the gym, turned their life around, and built a massive high-tech new house.
Oh. That is a brilliant way to frame the shifting dynamics.
Yeah.
Because Apple's current neighborhood, in your analogy, is Taiwan. For years, Apple has relied incredibly heavily on TSMC, the Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, to physically print their cutting-edge chips. But with the rising, highly unpredictable geopolitical tensions between the United States and China regarding Taiwan's sovereignty, relying entirely on a single island in the South China Sea is just an unacceptable single point of failure for a multi-trillion dollar company.
So Apple is basically utilizing the massive subsidies from the U.S. Japanese Act to bring their manufacturing back to North America to be safe.
Exactly. This raises an important question, though. Can Intel actually execute? Apple demands flawless, microscopic precision. Intel plans to use its unproven 18A process, which is basically a 1.8 nanometer node.
Wow.
And to put that technical jargon in perspective, a nanometer is unimaginably small. We're talking about drawing the microscopic brain of a computer chip with a laser pen so fine it is approaching the size of individual atoms.
And the deciding factor in all of this is what the industry calls yield.
Precisely the issue. Yield is just the simple math of profit. Out of a massive silicon wafer containing 1,000 microscopic chips, how many actually function perfectly without a single atomic defect?
Oh, I see.
Yeah. TSMC's yield and quality control are legendary. Intel, on the other hand, has struggled with manufacturing delays for a decade. If Intel drops the ball and their yield is too low, it would be financially disastrous for both companies.
But if they pull it off, it completely reshapes the global semiconductor map. I mean, this isn't just a corporate partnership. It is a matter of national security. It's the United States attempting to claw back its fundamental technological independence.
And it puts immense pressure on TSMC. If Intel proves they can be a reliable foundry for the most advanced chips on Earth, other tech titans like NVIDIA or AMD might start dual sourcing their manufacturing to American soil just to hedge their own geopolitical bets.
Wow. With all this relentless extraction companies commandeering our hard drives, harvesting our data, fracturing our attention, charging us more for hardware, and navigating these massive global chip wars, you usually want to just turn off the news and escape into a game.
Yeah, you need a break.
Right. But our final story shows that even our isolated digital sanctuaries are fundamentally shifting to meet modern demands.
Which brings us to Subnautica 2.
Yes. Subnautica 2 drops into early access on May 14th, so just 5 days from now. It's launching at $29.99, and it will be available day one in Xbox Game Pass. Now, the original game is widely considered a masterpiece of survival horror. specifically because you are utterly alone, stranded in a terrifying, isolating alien ocean.
It's pure isolation.
Yeah. The massive news for the sequel is the introduction of four-player co-op, and the community is fiercely divided over it.
Because adding multiplayer alters the core psychological DNA of the entire experience.
So what does this all mean? Like, if a game is famous for making you feel completely vulnerable and terrified by giant leviathans in the pitch dark, does adding three friends on voice chat turn a psychological horror survival experience into just like a wacky, chaotic underwater pool party?
Well, it highlights the classic developer dilemma in the modern gaming market. Game director David Kalina has aggressively defended the decision, and he argues that the co-op is totally optional.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. He insists they've designed the expansive world so that even if you drop in with friends, you will get separated, you will get lost in the dark, and you will face terror that your friends simply cannot save you from.
The ocean is vast and unforgiving, even with backup.
Right. But from a raw market perspective, the studio, Unknown Worlds, they know exactly what sells today. Look at the massive success of survival games like Raft or Grounded or The Forest.
Oh, yeah. Co-op is huge for those.
Co-op creates incredible, unpredictable viral moments for Twitch streamers and YouTubers, which drives massive sales. At a very accessible $30 price point, yeah, and leveraging the reach of Game Pass, they aren't just selling a solitary narrative anymore. They are attempting to build a massive, highly engaged community overnight.
So, if you are a purist, the advice floating around the community is pretty clear. Do your first run totally solo to respect the intended terrifying atmosphere. Then, you know, once you've survived the depths alone, bring your friends in for the chaotic second playthrough.
It is a very smart compromise. It gives players the agency to choose their own experience, which is frankly a refreshing change of pace compared to the rest of the tech stories we've unpacked today.
It really is nice to actually have a choice for once. Let's zoom out and look at the journey we've just been on today. We started with Google quietly commandeering our physical laptop space to build their AI infrastructure.
Yep.
We saw Meta strip away our messaging privacy to harvest our human conversations and basically appease government surveillance. We looked at Amazon Prime shrinking our attention spans to generate algorithmic behavioral data. We watched Nintendo raise prices on existing hardware to hedge against AI-driven memory shortages.
And Apple and Intel.
Right. We have Apple scrambling to fundamentally reshape the global supply chain with Intel. And finally, Subnautica 2 adapting our digital escapes to the demand for constant social connection.
It really is a profound convergence of events, and it highlights a really important reality here. Technology is no longer just a set of passive tools we use. It is a dominant, aggressive force actively shaping our boundaries, our economies, and our psychological habits. The tech giants are consolidating power at an unprecedented rate.
Yeah. In a landscape where your personal data, your hard drive, and your attention span are quite literally the most valuable commodities on Earth, your wallet and your app permissions are your only real leverage. You have to actively monitor your digital perimeter, which honestly brings me to a final thought I want to leave you with today.
Okay.
Consider this. With AI data centers pushing up the hardware prices for gamers, with AI models secretly taking over our laptop storage space, and algorithms devouring our private messages to train themselves on human nuance. Wait, sorry, let me rephrase that without trailing off. We are effectively subsidizing the entire AI revolution with our wallets, our personal devices, and our privacy, whether we actually consented to it or not. In this new aggressive era of tech, are we still the customers or have we just become the raw materials?
Wow, that might be the defining technological question of our time.
It really makes you look at that locked apartment door a little differently, doesn't it? Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the world around you, keep checking those permissions, and we will catch you on the next one.